It's time for the PowerMizzou.com podcast with interviews and analysis of your Missouri Tigers. Now, here's your host, Gabe DeArmond.
All right, welcome back to another week of the PowerMizzou.com podcast. We're going to get right to it every week, trying to bring in a former Tiger. And this week, added bonus, now member of the media, to break down Mizzou, TJ Moe. How you doing, man?
Good, Gabe. How's it going?
Not too bad, man. Hanging in. First off, let's just start with the simple one that's probably not a very simple answer. What in the world happened last weekend?
Yeah, it's tough. The big thing is, if you never get in a rhythm, then you don't even know really who's at fault. You know, you want to look at, first you look at the coaching and say, you know, you have a group of fans that says, well, Coach Henson called a terrible game. Well, what's he supposed to do? We barely got a first down. And right. Then you look at Maddie and say, okay, Maddie threw four interceptions. Okay, well, two of them hit his receivers right in the hands. Okay, then it's the receiver's fault. Are they getting open? Well, then you look at the film and you see there's a bunch of plays where they're running wide open. So whose fault is it offensively? And I think it's more offense than defense in this particular game, because the defense was on the field for over 43 minutes, and I thought they did a pretty good job. I think if Todd Gurley plays in that game, the score is more like 51-0 than 34-0.
Yeah, and I wrote earlier this week, I mean, if you want to assign blame and decide who's number one and number two and all that, I guess you can, but when nothing works, everybody gets to share the blame. And, I mean, there wasn't one thing that worked in that game.
No, there sure wasn't. I mean, offense, defense, special teams, I think Frenzer did a decent job. If there's one guy you want to look at that said maybe he did his job. It's a struggle, and the hard thing is when you get nothing going at all, what do you go to? Because we weren't running the ball well. A lot of teams say, okay, we are struggling in the passing game. Let's run the football. But we couldn't run the ball either. And when you can't stay on the field for more than three downs at a time, I don't know what you're supposed to do there either. It's really one of those games where you take a look at the film and then you burn it. You know, there's not much good you can take out of it. Aside from tossing to the side, drawing, you know, Coach Pinkel always used to say, let's draw a line in the sand right here, and that'll be the end of that, because that's not our football team, and that's not the team we want to see ever again.
Yeah, I know you were in one game, maybe two. There might have been one against Texas earlier on in your career that were a little bit like that. That, I mean, at halftime, the games were over. The other one, 2012, Alabama. I think the difference in this one and those is, you know, and I don't want to speak for what the feeling in the locker room might have been, but those you could see coming. Texas and Alabama, you could see coming. I mean, the Georgia game, Mark Richt told Pinkel at midfield, I never could have imagined that would happen. I mean, how big a difference is it there? I know you guys never went into a game thinking we're going to get steamrolled, but the Alabama game didn't surprise a lot of people. This shocked everybody.
Yeah, it sure did. You know, it was 2009 against Texas. I was a freshman. I wasn't playing in that game, but we're also talking about two eventual national champions, and this Georgia team is not a national championship team. Mm-hmm. You know, so those were far better teams than this Georgia team. The Alabama game, we went in thinking we've got to play a perfect game to have a chance. If we play a perfect game, we still might not win. But we're going to have to catch every ball. We're going to have to make every block. We're going to have to do a lot of things to counteract the abilities of this Alabama team to make this thing competitive, and we thought we were capable of doing it. Certainly did. We had some athletes, but again, we were playing with our backup quarterback in that game with four backup offensive linemen and one of the best running backs in the country watching from the sidelines. So we knew going into that game it was going to be a difficult task. This Georgia game here, I said on, I guess it was Thursday when we had you on the show, if you can still find Missouri plus three, take it. You know,
yeah.
And that's from a guy that was on the team 2 years ago that has played with all these guys, that's watched Georgia, watched essentially a good portion of the team we got now beat the Georgia team that was on the field on Saturday, minus Aaron Murray, minus Todd Gurley. You know, I don't know where the disconnect was. And again, I don't think that's a true representation of the Missouri football team. I think this is one of those films you got to burn.
All right, well, I was talking with former Tiger TJ Moe, and before we get to the optimistic can they bounce back portion of this, let's talk worst case scenario. I think it's a little there's some symmetry here that they're going to Gainesville, because that 2012 team, When you guys went down to Gainesville, it was 14-7. James threw the four picks. And I remember, you know, talking to Sheldon outside the locker room. And he didn't say it, but you just really got the sense, I don't know what else our side of the football can do because we're not doing anything on the other side of the football. And then, obviously, a couple more losses. Sheldon gets suspended, and that season ended the way it ended. How much of a danger, and I know you know some of these guys, but not all, I mean, how much of a danger is that, not just for this team, but for any team that eventually, I thought we saw some of it in the third quarter where the defense said, unless we score four times, we can't win this game.
Yeah, that's tough. But you go back, look at some of the best teams to ever play had terrible offenses. Look at the Ravens in 2000. I mean, those guys, if you want to talk about a defense, the only guys that really have that kind of perspective is a good defense, but not a defense that can win the game for them, you know, because otherwise you score a touchdown and you're rolling. You know, a lot of those old Alabama teams the last 4 years can pretty much do that. If you score 7 points, game over. Mm-hmm. You know, we haven't had defenses like that in the past, and we don't have that defense this year, but we have a pretty good defense, and that's a rough attitude to take. I never had that attitude of, could we please stop somebody, you know, because then we're losing the game. When your offense gets to that point, which we had a few different times early on in my career, where, gosh, I mean, it's that we're up 14-0 on Texas Tech, and then they come rolling back. You can blame that offense, defense, whatever you want, but there's some times where it's like, how about Baylor in 2011? It's like, man, if we could have stopped it once, we'd win the game. You have those times, but then you look back too and say, okay, there's a whole lot of times that if we'd have scored any points, then we probably should have won that game too. So you go back and forth. I mean, I think the whole idea is it's not offense, defense, it's a team. And yeah, you're not on the field for those portions of the plays, but you know what? You're not on the field for every offensive play either. You know, it's not like you can control everything. The coaches aren't on the field for any of the plays. And so that's a really poor perspective to have if you're going to be in a team environment. Like, could you guys please do something? When did it become you guys? When did it stop becoming us? You know, and some of our guys have had that in the past. Sheldon was one of those guys where he's like, I don't know what else to do. And rightfully so, our offense did not do well that year. But it's really a poor attitude to have, and it causes a lot of disruption within the team.
Yeah, specifically to this team, I mean, we've seen Matty Mock certainly better than he was the last 2 weeks. I've been of the mind for a year now that people ignored some of the signs that, you know, some of this all-SEC talk and things like that were a little overstated for his first year as a full-time starter. What do you see out of him? I mean, what's the ceiling? Where can he get to this year?
You know, I'm going to try to get some film and look over the first few games and kind of see if I can see what he's seeing, because it's so hard for anybody who doesn't break down every play of the game and go back and actually look what happens. We can't tell you what happened or what Matty's seeing. Unless you've got the coach's eye view, you don't understand, too. I mean, the only way I could piece it together is say, okay, I know the play call, I know what the reads are supposed to be, and then I can watch the film. Then I can tell you what Matty's thinking. Until then, the only one that's got a clue is Matty and the coaches. The receivers don't have a clue. The line doesn't have a clue. Nobody really understands except for the people who knew the play call, the coverage, and the reads. So I don't know what some of the issues have been. I know he's a young quarterback, and I know if you remember back to Blaine Gabbert's first year as a starter, if Kenary Alexander's on that team, we probably win three games. Mm. But because we have D.A., Blaine doesn't really have to make his reads. He just throws it up, and off we go. You know, Matty doesn't have that. He was going to have that when we had Doriel, but now we don't.
Right.
So Matty's got to be a young quarterback. And the hardest thing, I tried to explain this a little bit on the radio show, is that the defenses are getting so sophisticated now that you show something different than what you're in every single time. So you're expecting that, but you have to be able to react. So if they come out in cover four and you're running a short out from the slot with a go on the outside, then you're thinking, okay, I'm going to read the corner and we're probably going to go to the out instead of the go. But if they roll the cover three really quick, now the corner's deep and you've got the outside linebacker who's shooting out to the flat, well, now your read changes. Now you're not reading that corner anymore. Everything goes. You may even go to the other side of the field based on what's happening and how fast that linebacker is. If it's Xavier Gooden, now you're not open. You know, so all those things change, and for a young quarterback to process all that stuff in that short amount of time, everything that I just explained in the last 25 seconds has to happen in a half a second in Maddie's head. He has to go, okay, we're now, it's three invert, there's a jet off the edge, I got to get the ball fast, where am I going with football? And so for a young quarterback, that's a really difficult thing to do, and that's why guys like Chase Daniel had a big advantage because he saw all that in high school, and he's basically in that same offense on top of being a very intelligent guy. Now, I think Maddie's a very smart guy, too. I don't know that this is even Maddie's issue, but I know for a lot of young quarterbacks, that is it. And so we've got a little bit of the Johnny Manziel, turn your back to the field stuff that we love, but he's got to make sure, you know, we can't throw caution into the wind every time because that's where some of the interceptions are coming from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I find it interesting in what you said about breaking down the film. We have a limited view of things, but I found it interesting you mentioned Gabbert because, to me, Maddie's number one issue is the same thing that a lot of us from a distance thought we saw with Blaine at times, which is taking off from the pocket a little early and creating pressure that's not there. And not only doing that, but Maddie, I think, does this much more so than Blaine did, doing it and putting himself in a position where he can't physically throw the ball downfield. I mean, do you see some of that just watching the games?
You know, it's a little bit difficult because we had so much pressure early on in the season coming right up the middle. Now you've got to go. If the pressure's coming off the edge, then you can step up into the pocket and you're still okay. And you just assume that the tackle is going to push the end by you. But early on, when we had Anthony Gotti in there before he got hurt, we were having a lot of pressure up the middle. So Maddie was forced to flush out a lot of times. He ended up going to the right. And so I think he's probably got in that state of mind a little bit, thinking, okay, that I'm going to have to do this. I mean, when you drop over and over and over again the first three or four games and that's what happens, that's kind of what you're thinking and what you're expecting and feeling, because otherwise what they're going to do, stand there and get smoked, and then everybody's saying, why isn't Maddie moving? He's supposed to be this mobile quarterback. What good is he to us if he just stands there? You know, so it's one side of the coin or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Maddie is a guy that can run around and make some plays, and we saw he makes some phenomenal plays on the run. If you remember, I don't remember the game now, but he threw it across. He was running to the left, and he threw it across his body, threw a bullet to Jimmy Hunt in the end zone, like 25 yards. He makes those type of plays and has that ability. But what they're doing is they're kind of bringing the old Brad Smith defense back. If you remember back then,
right.
Now they keep the safeties deep, and they try to keep them inside the pocket. And they're not doing a whole lot of blitzes and different kind of stuff. They're just making him sit in the pocket and go, and then he's leaving the pocket, and now we've got nothing to do. And so if Manny stays in the pocket, he's got the ability to be a pocket passer. But it's just a learning curve. You know, we're forgetting this is like his 10th or 11th start.
Right. Enough of depressing everyone and making them angry that's listening to this. I mean, I guess the good thing is Missouri's not exactly facing a team that's going to have to hang 40 on to win this weekend. I mean, you know, they're 4-2. I think only one game you look at and say it'd be really a surprise if they win. That's at A&M. I mean, the potential's there, probably not to win the East, but at least to bounce back and make this a pretty solid season, isn't it?
I think so, too. You know, we've got Florida. They are certainly not a group of world beaters. They got Treyon Harris, who's coming back. We'll see. Muschamp says they're going to use him as well as Driscoll. I prefer they use Driscoll. I think we'll win if they do. They got a good defense. But you know what? We went down there in 2012 with a team that couldn't hardly walk straight because we had so many injuries, and we probably should have beat them. You know, and it's a lot of the same group as then for them and us. You know, same kind of guys out there, same coaching staff. They won 11 games that year. You know, some of it is matchups. You don't really know how it's going to pull out. You know, they probably shouldn't have beat Tennessee. They probably shouldn't have beat Kentucky. They probably should have beat LSU, and they didn't, you know, so challenge is a game of should-haves, coulda, woulda. We probably shouldn't have played like we did against Georgia, but we're going to have to come out and make some plays, and here's the thing, we got playmakers. It's like, what were we talking about? It's like a different season than what we were talking about. Do you remember the conversations we were having the first couple of weeks of all the playmakers we've got and can't find a way to get the ball to Russ and Murph enough? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, we're having a different discussion now, and I don't think that's right. I think if we can get the ball in Murph's hands 10 to 12 times this game. If we can get Russ 10 to 12 carries this game, you know, if we can get Jimmy Hunt the ball and make sure that he's focused, then we got some playmakers out there, and we can run up and down the field in these guys. I still don't think the offensive line's bad. I'm not sure where everybody's getting that from. A lot of the pressure Maddie's creating for himself, and I think they're doing plenty enough to certainly score some points and get some first downs. But we turn around and everybody blames the offensive line every time Maddie takes off from the pocket, and I just don't think that's right.
All right, TJ, good stuff. I know you're busy, man. Real quick, for the few Missouri fans who don't know, where can they hear you? Where can they read what you're writing these days?
Yeah, I joined, teamed up with Jim Edmonds and Tim McKernan on CBS Sports 920 in St. Louis. There's an app you can listen to if on iTunes, I guess, that you just put in CBS Sports 920. They have a podcast and stuff. You can get that in Columbia or Kansas City if you want. And, yeah, I write some stuff on, it's called Inside STL, InsideSTL.com, I think. And just started a little bit. I kind of just write what I feel like. I'm not really, there's no columns or anything like that. Just anytime I think of something, I'll write it down and see if anybody cares about it. So that's what we got going.
Hey, you just described the last 12 years of my life. your boy's going to come back and make it an I-70 series?
Dude, I hope so. You know, I was hoping we were going to talk Cardinals Royals at the beginning when you tripped up on that a little bit.
People get mad at me when I talk Cardinals Royals.
I just don't see it. You know, I truly, Andrew Wilson was at my house the last 3 days, and we sat down and we watched the Royals, and we both rooted for the Royals, and then the Cardinals came on, and we both sat there and rooted for the Cardinals. Until it's time to play, then I don't understand. Mm-hmm. I have always had the opinion that I think I would prefer anybody in Missouri to play better than anybody else anywhere else.
It would be fun to have the entire country, New York and California and everybody, have to sit there and watch tiny little Missouri in the World Series again. I'd be all right with that.
Isn't this like the worst rated LCS in the last 10 years or something like that?
It could be. I haven't paid attention. There's probably a high school football game on somewhere everybody's watching instead.
Listen, the Royals, I don't know if it's good or bad that they're getting this break. Edmonds seems to think they're slowing down a little bit as far as just not putting the bat on the ball as much as they were. So maybe this break will be good for them. I tell you what, if the Cardinals aren't in it, I'm full force Royals fan. I hope they do it.
All right. Good stuff, TJ. I appreciate it, man. We'll talk to you.
All right, Gabe. Take care.
All right. Have a good one. TJ Moe, former Mizzou wide receiver, full-fledged member of the media, and great stuff there, guys. X's and O's, and explaining some of the issues. Some of them we see. Some of them I think we think we see, and maybe it's something different. Either way, Missouri has a lot of them to get figured out before they face Florida on Saturday night. Okay, speaking of the Florida Gators, they host Missouri 7 p.m. Florida time, 6 p.m. Missouri time on ESPN2, and we're going to talk about this one with Landon Watnick from Inside the Gators. Landon, how you doing, man?
Doing pretty good. How are you?
Doing all right. Appreciate you taking some time today. And this is the way I describe this game. It's like whatever the irresistible force versus the immovable object is, this one's like the opposite. I mean, it might be the first one to get like 10 first downs in this game.
Yeah, it's going to be a pretty interesting contest. I mean, right now, a lot of the Vegas lines have Florida favored by 6 points. I don't know how much to believe that. I would definitely pick Mizzou in that spread. I think it's just going to be a close game either way. It'll come down to probably a field goal, my guess. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, people up here are obviously focused on Missouri's offensive issues, 147 yards and nothing against Georgia. Really had trouble stringing more than two first downs together. And Florida put up 27 points against LSU, but they're not really a team that's lighting things up offensively either. But where is the Florida offense right now?
Well, I guess you could say that the grass is greener on the other side. Florida's offense right now has been just pretty putrid as well. I mean, Andre DeBose scored the first touchdown of that game. So if you're really looking at it from Florida's offense, they scored 20 points. And Andre DeBose set them up later in that game with a 53-yard punt return. So special teams really helped out Florida in that game. But Florida's offense right now is struggling. I mean, Jeff Driscoll is not doing very well. As you can see, I think past couple games, I think since the Kentucky game, he's had like 7 interceptions.
Wow.
It's been pretty rough. And what's really been worse for the Florida offense has been the receiver play. I mean, outside of Marcus Robinson, nobody is stepping up. Tight ends have become a non-factor. You got guys like LaTroy Pittman and Ahmad Fulwood that were expected to make an impact in the from the beginning of training camp, and now they're basically non-factors in this offense. So it's been rough going for this Florida offense, at least in the passing attack.
Yeah, and I know Muschamp said he plans on playing both Driscoll and Treyon Harris. Do you have any sort of a feel for kind of, I mean, what the approach is going to be? Are they each going to get a little time in the first half, and whichever one's good, they go with them, or are they going to switch back and forth?
It's kind of a mystery from that regard, but Driscoll's definitely going to start. Will Muschamp said this on the SEC teleconference on Wednesday, that he's going to go with whoever has a hot hand. So I guess if Driscoll starts off hot early, which, I mean, I highly doubt from what I've seen the past couple games. But if he starts off hot early, I think they stick with him for a while. Maybe he was trying in some scenarios. But if Driscoll's struggling beginning of the first, maybe early second, give Treyon a couple of drives to really prove himself. I mean, have you seen the end of that Kentucky game? Or not Kentucky, Tennessee?
No, actually, I flipped away when it was 9-0 because I thought Florida had no chance to score, and I didn't see the end of it.
Yeah, I mean, as you could see, Treyon adds some new elements to his offense. I mean, obviously, Driscoll is way more of a physical runner, 6'4", 230, is better in those short yarded situations, maybe on third, fourth down when it comes to running. But Treyon Harris is better in space. He's quicker. And just that offense with him in the fourth quarter looked like it just had more of an emotional boost. It looked like they were really rallying behind him. So a lot of coaches have described it as the it factor, which they call his confidence in the pocket and just his lack of panicking. But, yeah, I mean, a lot of people are calling for Treyon right now to start and really play. But we got a quarterback controversy here for sure.
Defensively, how good is this Florida team? I mean, I know the secondary had some issues early on, but where do they stand?
Well, the defensive line didn't have the greatest game against LSU, I think in part because of Vidal Alexander and Lyle Collins. They were just really good on the left side, and that's where all the big runs came from with Leonard Fournette and Terrence McGee. They really used those two, and they had a lot of open B gaps, C gaps. And I broke it down in my tape review that I wrote for Inside the Gators. That's really where the bread and butter was offensively. But this secondary, right now, there's just a lot of question marks. I mean, Brian Poole has been inconsistent in coverage. There's a lot of miscommunications. Obviously, on that 3rd and 25 play where Trayvon Dorrall got the 41-yard reception, that was Florida was supposed to run an NP check, and Keanu Neal missed that. So that's where they were able to exploit Florida and then eventually score that touchdown late in the game. So basically, the biggest issue for Florida secondary has been just communication, lack of eye control. But Jalen Tabor has really stood up, the true freshman, the five-star recruit. He's been great so far the past couple games. He's held Malachi Dupree to no yards when he was covering him. So, yeah, he's been pretty good, Jalen Tabor.
All right, talking with Landon Watnick from Inside the Gators. Just a couple more to finish things up, Landon. I look at this, and it's ridiculous to say this, but one of these teams is going to come out of this game thinking that they have some hope to maybe stay in the SEC East race all season long. The other team, I think, is going to come out of this game and think, all right, we got to make sure we get six, get to a bowl, and maybe can add another one here or there. I mean, do you kind of view this as a line in the sand game, really, for both these teams? I think one team goes one way and the other one has to go the other.
Well, viewing it from Florida's standpoint, this is a make-or-break game. If Florida loses this, then I don't think they could pull it off, because then they got Georgia left on the schedule. I mean, South Carolina and Vanderbilt are winnable games for Florida, but Florida needs to win out if they really have any realistic shot of an SEC title. I mean, there's just so much parity in that end of the spectrum. I mean, obviously the West is looking way better than the East right now, but Florida really needs to win out if they have any realistic hope. And how do you kind of view it on Mizzou's side? I mean, what's the culture been like there?
I mean, I guess theoretically, if they win this game, there are winnable games. They have Vanderbilt, they have Tennessee, they have Arkansas. They got to go to A&M. But, I mean, they have winnable games, so I guess you could make an argument that mathematically, you know, they still have a decent shot. They only have one league loss, but I've watched this team. This is not a team that we should be talking about SEC East title. This is a team we should be talking about win a few of the swing games and hope to find a way to get to 7 or 8 this year, in my personal opinion.
Yeah, it's crazy what it's become. I mean, look now, you got Georgia leading the way, and then Kentucky tying with Florida. Now Kentucky is, I think, second place. So
yeah,
it's really been a shakeup. I mean, who knows if Kentucky wins this league?
Yeah, I mean, you could easily win this thing at like 5-3. It's crazy. Last thing for you, I know Will Muschamp's job is a point of discussion every single week. Given what you just said about this game for Missouri against Missouri. It's my opinion that if Missouri were to come down there and pull an upset, this might be the week at the end of the year that Florida fans look at and say, that's when we knew he was gone. Is that too much to put on this week?
No, this is a make-or-break week. If Florida loses to this Missouri team, then there's really no excuses. And I feel like if they do lose to the Tigers, Florida doesn't really have a shot at winning the SEC East. And really right now it's win the SEC East or lose your job for Will Muschamp. So, yeah, I'll put that on there. This is a huge, huge game for the Gators, especially after that LSU loss.
Yeah, no doubt. Should be good. Well, I don't know if it'll be good, but it should be close on Saturday night. So, Landon, appreciate it, man.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
All right, have a good one. Landon Watnick, InsideTheGators.com. And, folks, it really is. The grass is always greener. I think Missouri fans going to this one going, oh, my gosh, I don't know how we're going to beat Florida, which we never would have said 6 weeks ago. And I think Florida fans going to this game going, I don't know, maybe we can beat Missouri, but I don't think we're any good, which I think a lot of Florida fans might have thought anyway for the last few weeks. But I don't know. I got no idea. I've got to make a pick in 24 hours, and I don't know what it's going to be. I got no feel for this game whatsoever other than if somebody gets to 24 points, I think they're probably going to win this game because these are two offenses that are really struggling. Appreciate you listening. Appreciate Landon Watnick, TJ Moe for joining us. We will be back next week. It'll be homecoming week, Vanderbilt. And, folks, if I told you I had any clue what we were going to be talking about or what the mood was going to be next Thursday, I'd be a liar. And, you know, I try to avoid that. So maybe we'll just talk about game one of the World Series. Talk to you then.